Welcome to the Gentle Sleep Podcast, a podcast hosted by me, Claire, a holistic sleep consultant.
And me, Josh, Claire's husband, and just a regular guy.
This podcast is for all of you who have felt overwhelmed by the conflicting information around baby sleep. It's for parents who want to feel empowered to follow their intuition and everyone who has longed for a sleep solution that wasn't cried out. This podcast will help you to feel encouraged, empowered, and better equipped to handle bedtime battles and naptime nightmares with each listen. If you'd like to find out more about me or have access to all of my free sleep tips and tricks, make sure you're following me on Instagram at The Gentle Sleep Coach.
So, welcome back to another week with The Gentle Sleep Podcast.
Yes.
Claire, how has your day been today?
We have had a hectic day today because we've just come back from our Tassie trip, which was brilliant to see all the family. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that was potentially the worst holiday we've ever had.
I feel like that's a bold statement because we've had some pretty amazingly wild and messed up holidays.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like every single thing has gone wrong and went wrong, which is what's kind of prompted us to talk about traveling with children and managing their sleep. But I don't know. Do you feel like we've had a worse trip than the one that we literally just came home from today?
I think the travel down was definitely the who's who of bad things happening, like
yes,
the actual day of travel. But I think when we got there, it was fine.
Oh, it was fine when we were there, except for
more
Oscar being like hospitalized with croup and like the yes, only one social thing I had planned getting canceled because the person got COVID.
True. That's true. So we're talking about travel and sleep with travel.
Yes,
today.
We are. We're going to talk about travel, all things travel related, how to manage travel with babies, toddlers, and also their sleep, because it's a stressful thing to go away with children as we experience. Should we talk through like what our experience has just been?
Let's have the rundown.
Yeah. So we were traveling to Launceston, as everybody who's been around for a little while knows. We're originally from Tasmania, moved back there for a short term.
I work for a Tasmanian company.
Yeah, work for a Tasmanian company. So we're going back firstly to see your family and to meet our new niece, but also for you to work. And so
yes,
when did we leave?
Left Saturday morning and everything was going great. It seemed like it was going great.
Yes.
We had plenty of time. We're tracking well. We're both very organized people. We usually, and me personally, I like do the thing where you work out what the absolute latest you can be there.
Yeah.
And then you step backwards from each point and you always add like a little bit of fat for each step.
Of course.
But then you end up like if anyone's like me, you either end up perfectly on time or you sit around in the airport for like an hour because you added way too much fat.
We did not add anywhere near as enough fat.
Well, what happened was, and this is where it all got unstuck, is I forgot to pack the little, what's it called?
The slumber pod. Thing? We're going to talk about the slumber pod as some of our like travel hacks. But basically what it is, it's a portable blackout that goes over the porta-cot. And the reason this is important is because one, we have the most distractible toddlers known to mankind. And there's no way these two, there's no way this kid will sleep in a bright room. He has low sleep needs, so he's not driven to sleep as it is. And so to put him in a bright new space, it's going to ruin the holiday. We were also room sharing them.
We were, or at least we were trying, that was the goal.
Yeah. And so like nobody wants their two-year-old and their three-year-old playing because they can see each other. So the slumber pod was a must and we had forgotten it, which meant that as we were pulling up towards the airport, we realized it wasn't there and we had to drive home.
Well, it was, this is the quick short version of the absolute like parfait of mess ups that was our trip to the airport, right?
Yeah.
So I messed up and I forgot the slumber pod and we got onto the Eastern Distributor, which if you're familiar with Sydney, it's like once you're on the Eastern Distributor, the next off ramp is the airport.
Yeah.
So we were basically within a few short minutes of leaving our house, we were on this road that we couldn't get off, but we knew we had to turn around. So it was excruciatingly painful. We eventually got home. I rushed upstairs, got the porta-cot, slumber pod, and tossed it in its bag. We got back there. drove to this place where they park your car and drive you to the airport and take care of your car while you're away. And that place is usually amazingly on time, and they were 20 minutes late. Yeah. So we stood around waiting for the shuttle for 20 minutes.
And our flight was like in an hour's time.
Yeah, like we lost a lot of fat by going back to get the slumber pod.
The thing that gets worse is as we're driving to the airport, the road is closed.
Yeah, so from in the shuttle, the shuttle had to take a detour, and then we finally got there and the trolley machine wasn't spitting out a trolley for us.
No, but I need to paint the picture. There's like, I need to just preface as well. Theo is screaming like his life is ending this whole time. He can sense
the tension.
He is sense the stress. Hysterical, absolutely hysterical. Josh is like trying to talk to me and say, hey, Claire, you need to be quick when we get out. You need to be quick. We need to be on it. I'm like, stop talking. I have a screaming Theo. Oscar's losing his mind. I know we have to be quick.
It was halftime. Telling me. The coach was head in the huddle. I was trying to ramp everyone up ready to kick off.
I have never been more annoyed at you than in that moment.
But so anyway,
like, oh, you don't say. But we rock up and the trolley thing isn't working. So you are literally, and he drops us at the other side of the airport. So we have to walk the whole way through. So I have Oscar and Theo. You literally have two car seats, the stupid bugaboo in the gigantic bugaboo pram bag, which is the most impractical thing, three suitcases. And the slumber pod.
And the slumber pod. Don't forget the slumber pod.
And we're like literally racing to the other end of the airport with just things exploding everywhere. We get there. We like finally get like all the bags dropped off, have to go to the oversize. And as we rock up, the conveyor belt just stops working.
And the guy's like, oh, you can't leave this stuff here. You have to wait for me to be able to put it through, because if I can't put it through, you're going to have to take it on board.
Which isn't even, like, how can you take oversized luggage on the actual plane itself? It doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. He was kind of trying to come up with a reason. But
we got through like running.
Well, the lady was like, hey, you guys have to go.
Yeah.
You're going to miss your flight.
Yeah. So we're like literally running, and it's at like gate 56, which is like the back right-hand corner, which is just classic Tasmanian flights are always the furthest gate. It was the furthest gate. We're running, literally running, because they're like calling our name over the speaker. Theo is still screaming. He's pooped himself. It's like coming out the side. It's a nightmare. And as we are getting onto the plane, the guy stops us and he's like, you don't have a boarding pass for Theo. So then you get kicked off the plane
to go and find it. But it was stressful in the moment. We're like, this is literally like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong.
Literally everything.
But I got to the end of the aero bridge and I was like, oh, I'll just check the backpack one more time. And I was just slipped into a different segment of the front pocket. And so I ripped it out and it actually wasn't that bad.
Wild. But
it was
bad. And then Theo screamed the whole plane, the whole flight. Like, didn't cry, screamed.
Yeah.
It was bad.
So all that to say, that is a picture that nobody wants hanging on their wall. Let's just say that much. Nobody.
You know, it always brings out the worst in you as well. So I swear we would have looked like the worst parents.
It brought out a lot of sweat, that's for sure. I was sweating so profusely.
Frustrated. I was so annoyed.
I was a hog. I was sitting in that seat just like panting and just sweating.
It wasn't great. Anyway, we have had actually a lot of travel experience, and sadly, a lot of our experiences have looked somewhat like this. Like something always seems to go wrong for us. So we've put a lot of time and thought into managing travel with children. And although the flights and the lead up to the flight seem to be a disaster, I will say that one thing we usually nail is sleep.
That's true.
Thank God, because otherwise that wouldn't be. That would probably be problematic as a sleep consultant, right? But we seem to nail sleep, and we seem to nail things like managing having a life and still being away and still, you know, making sure your children don't become so overtired that they ruin the things you're trying to enjoy anyway. So I think that that's where our strong point lies, not so much in getting there itself, but we're going to talk through a lot of the hacks we've come up with along the way too. But that's basically been our day, or our last couple of days.
It was. And in brief, running through the other things, Oscar got a cold, Thea got a cold, Oscar just cold turned to croup. We ended up in the emergency room.
That's awful.
And the one night that we had booked for things, our niece had COVID. So you weren't able to then go out.
No, you got to have lots of social experiences.
I was trying to cruise past that.
No, this seems to be a recurring theme. If people have listened to the previous episode in involving a partner in bedtime, they will know that you seem to have a knack having all the social things.
I have no idea.
Perfectly
how.
For you and everything blowing up in my face, which is pretty much what happened.
I've got nothing to say.
Anyway, you got to enjoy all your dinners with all your friends that, well, it was meant to be a double date that I missed out on because Oscar had croup and he was like so unwell. And the next night we were going to tag team and I was going to go out. But then our niece got COVID and I was going out for dinner with my sister-in-law. And I was like, of course that happened. Anyway, let's dive into travel and everything. So this is something I work with clients on all the time. In fact, I've written a complete travel guide, which sits inside the monthly subscription because it is something that is difficult to kind of wrap your head around, especially the first time you've done it. It can be intimidating, especially if you're going on like long haul flights, managing time zone changes, or even if you're just like room sharing with your baby, or you have two children sleeping together, or you're worried about like how to actually enjoy your holiday while still ensuring that they're not like so exhausted. So I've basically written it into a whole guide and it is a question we get a lot. Hey, so I thought like, let's just break it down and talk about everything that we can do in the next hour or so to help you guys have some more support when it comes to your holidays with your little ones. So
it's time to break it down.
So I think like after listening to the disaster flight that we just talked about, actually being prepared for the plane.
It's a good idea. It's worth considering.
And like, it's worth considering. And we actually did this on the way back home. Like when we were going, honestly, it was such a whirlwind. I had completely forgotten that we were going to Tasmania that week. Like I knew we were going, but I didn't realize it was that week. So I came back from my nan's house on Friday, which is where I go. She looks after the boyos every single week, which is amazing. But I got home and you'd cleaned the house and you were like telling me I needed to pack
my stuff.
Yeah. And I hadn't computed that we were leaving the next day. So I had done nothing, which meant we weren't prepared. But basically what we've done on the way home is we've been much more prepared and we had a much better flight just today.
It was like showing two extremes.
Yeah.
What can happen when you're not prepared and the best case scenario.
Yeah, exactly. So preparing for the plane, if you're on a flight as opposed to driving, we'll chat about driving as well, can be a good idea. So of course, like practically speaking, actually packing extra clothes in a carry-on, especially if you have kids, is really important, particularly if you fly with an airline that we won't mention who seems to have a knack for losing your luggage. You don't want to show up to the other end and have literally no sleep sack, no pajamas, nothing to dress your children. So I'm a big fan of always putting spare, like at least a day's worth in the carry-on in case of that, because unfortunately this does happen to us as well. Classic.
Yeah, that is one thing I would never think of. And I'm so grateful that you think of that.
Yeah. Well, imagine showing up to your destination and going to put your kids down for the night, which most of our flights seem to be in the afternoon. And then they've lost your luggage and you have nothing to dress them in. You have no nappies. You have no sleep sack, like nothing. It's a nightmare. So not a vibe. And I always make sure that I put like enough for like nappies for the period of time that we're there until the next morning, plus three, because you just never know. You just never know. So like, honestly, that has saved our butt on a number of occasions. We've had luggage go astray. So I'm a big fan of that. And then practically speaking, you want to actually think about, especially if you have, like 3-year-olds and under, I would say, like not new babies, like little babies are going to be so easy on flights because you can hold them and feed them and cuddle them and it's fine. And I found that Oscar, now that he's like 3.5, is fine. Theo is a living nightmare on a plane.
He's right in the sweet spot when it comes to travel.
It sucks because he doesn't want to be restrained, but he has to be strapped to your lap. And he doesn't have a high enough attention span to just watch a screen the whole time like Oscar does. So actually thinking practically about how can we maintain composure from him during the flight can help. So what we've done on the way back is we've had some shows ready to go on the well, I'd say the iPad, but it's actually just our phones because we don't have an iPad.
Look, I would say your phone is nearly the size of an iPad, so that's fine.
We have tensions about this. You have the ridiculous mini phone that your thumbs are even too big to operate.
Guys, get amongst the iPhone one. Mini. No. Do if there was a favor, not. Thank me later.
It's bad. But anyway, so thinking about like realistically, what's her attention span? For Theo, I reckon 10 minutes of screen is all he's going to do. So then we need to think of multiple things. So what we did today is we got some sticker books. We got some of the water, like, you know, the texts that are clear and you draw on the page and it turns it into colors. Post-it notes on the back of the actual plane seat itself and for them to just rip off, especially if you have a younger baby that is kind of just working out picking things off, like 6 to 10 months, I'd say is really great for that. Ample snacks and snacks that take them a long time to eat, like sultanas, for example.
I thought you meant like a 7-course like degustation menu.
No, just like took a
I'm imagining like the courses coming out over a series of hours.
Just remember how like he literally sat there and ate those sultanas for about 13 minutes because it takes one at a time.
One by one.
Exactly. And then all the screens, like honestly, all of the screens, 100%. Now,
gloves are off.
Now, if we're going on a long haul flight, the plane pal is somewhat frowned upon by airlines, but
what is a plane pal?
It's this little thing that inflates into the footwell and turns the seat into a bed.
Are you kidding me?
It's incredible. I'm going to show you.
Do they have plane pals for me, for adults?
I know. It's incredible. So if you're going like overseas, I would highly recommend booking an airline that allows it or stowing it deep inside your carry-on and sitting in a far, far corner and inflating it on the down low.
You mean you wouldn't recommend wink, wink?
No, I would
but
never.
You really would.
I would be in like row 55D inflating that thing manually.
Seriously. That's awesome. Incredible. I never knew that existed.
It's amazing.
This moment.
It's amazing. And then obviously thinking about things like what's going to help with it, with the pressure. So like a dummy is obviously going to be awesome. Feeding them is going to be awesome. If you have a child like Theo who's never taken a dummy and doesn't feed anymore, then a suckable item
Yeah,
it's really weird, but something for them to suck on can be great. So like he won't suck a thumb. I didn't particularly want to give him a lollipop. I don't know if anyone else gets nervous about things that are giant, hard, round balls that can come off a stick.
I think lots of people get nervous of that.
They do? Okay. I didn't know.
I think that's pretty normal.
So we got him a fruit strap because he sucks on those. So anyway, so things like that can be really helpful. Now, that's your plane basics covered, right? We'll get into the sleep side of things as well. But what we want to think about as well is not everyone's traveling by plane. Sometimes we're traveling by car, which in my personal experience and yours as well, I'm sure, Josh, because you're often there.
Cars are much worse. There a few times with our kids.
We have not, I don't know. Oscar's never loved the car. Theo is a ball of energy. He can't sit still for long. So the car can be just as problematic as well. And sometimes even more stressful because you're in your own space. So when it's not going well, you don't even have like the pretend, like you can't, you don't even pretend to be okay because there's nobody to be shamed by.
Nice.
I feel like on the plane, it's like even if the world's falling down, you're still there like trying to be patient and gracious and smiling because there's like hundreds of strangers surrounding you, whereas in the car, it's just you, hey. Like,
that's true. But when you used to do road trips with your parents and your brother, and they fully, and this is a little bit besides the point, but they bought you Game Boys, hey.
Yeah, they did. That's the thing that happened.
That
we drove
blows my mind. Like I would have been the happiest child alive.
I mean, I didn't necessarily want a Game Boy, so probably didn't have the same impact on me that it would have on you.
Yeah, wrong crowd.
Yeah.
Definitely so wrong crowd.
When we're thinking about the car, something like that, if you have older children, it's obviously going to be great, but most of the time we're going to be working with like littler ones who aren't going to be playing a Game Boy, so thanks, Josh, for the input.
Look, Never say never.
But what we're going to think firstly is playing to strengths. Like the difference between the plane and the car is you can control the timing of the car. So if you have, for example, a baby or toddler that sleeps brilliantly in the car and you're going on a long road trip, like 100% time that drive for their nap. Or on the flip side, if you have a baby or toddler that hates the car, like hates it and screams the whole time they're in the car, which was us with Oscar, think about how you can break your trip up and like make it more manageable. So can you leave early in the morning when they're in a better mood and can we have lots of pit stops? Or can you again time it with a sleep so that they're not conscious for a lot of it? Yeah. To help, that can be great. And then of course, just making sure you're pulling over regularly. Like I think it's every 2 hours, we're wanting to make sure baby's getting a break from the car seat. So if it's possible to do that, that's going to be really helpful. Some things that can be important are like just especially to do with like safety with food, like probably not wanting to necessarily feed babies and toddlers in car seats. But if you are, just making sure you're like, you're back there with them basically. And then all of the same distraction factors apply. Like, can we give them something to play with? Toy rotations in the car can be awesome. Screens, again, if you have an old enough child, are going to be a godsend. Even just like soundtracks. So like the Wiggles one that we have going, for example, can break it up a little bit as well. But and yeah.
Oscar loved a game of I Spy, I will say.
He did. Now, let's get into like some nitty gritty when we're traveling, time zone changes. These are big things. We have actually never done this ourselves, but I have worked with, so many clients who book in because they've come back from overseas and they don't know how to manage the time zone change. So they'll like book me in to help them with the time zone change, which is really cool. I love doing it. Now, obviously, we can go about this a number of different ways, right? Because sometimes we're going from like Sydney to Western Australia and it's going to be a couple of hours difference. Sometimes we're going from Sydney to Brisbane and it's going to be an hour's difference. Sometimes we're going to Paris and it's going to be the complete opposite. And depending on what we're doing, kind of depends how we can go about it. The biggest hack that I always talk to clients about is to not be afraid of actually not even changing time zones if it's under 3 hours so that you can live your best life. So like, let's say, for example, we were coming from Western Australia. Are they 2 hours behind us?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So like, yeah, 2 hours behind us and you're coming to Sydney, like that is the dream because you can stay on your current time zone and have night times out with your baby and it not impact them at all. You just pretend that you're still on your normal time and 7 o'clock becomes 9 p.m. Like that's genius.
In the opposite way, does that mean if we go to Perth for a holiday, we can put the boys to bed at 5 p.m.?
I mean, you could, but you'd be awake at 5 p.m.
Bloody sold. I'll just book tickets.
But yeah, not actually adjusting to your time zone if it suits you and what you've got going on is completely okay, especially if you have something like the Slumber Pod, which is like such a go-to for us for travel. Like that can be really helpful. Or if you're wanting to adjust because you want your baby to be on that time zone for whatever reason, that's okay too. And if it's 2-3 hours or under, you can adjust them in advance by shifting the day by 15 to 30 minutes every couple of days, just as you would do with daylight savings. So like, you know, if you're pushing it later, rather than, you know, putting them down to bed at 7 o'clock tonight, we'd stretch it out to 7:30 and then they'd sleep in a bit longer the next morning. And then we'd add that half hour and then push it out to 8, for example. So you can do that in the lead up to kind of adjust in advance if you want to, if you're that organized. Or of course you can just wing it and just kind of get onto the current time zone when you get there, which is what we're going to need to do if we are going internationally and we're having like a complete time zone change. So it can be intimidating. And I know this is something that a lot of families that I work with stress about is like, oh my gosh, like I'm going, like I had two clients this week, actually both of which one was going to India and one had just come back from India and obviously complete opposite side of the world. So totally different time zones. So actually thinking through, like, how can you help to adjust the circadian rhythm or your baby's body clock to adjust to the new time zone can take a lot of the stress away. And it's actually not all that hard to do. It should only really take like 5 to 7 days, absolute maximum. And you should get big improvement along the way as well. So basically you just, yeah.
Ask a question for the homies that I know are listening. If you're kind of working through something with sleep,
yeah,
but you have a trip coming up, would you suggest you kind of hang out and wait till the trip is over before you work on sleep stuff, or can you work through it?
I mean, you can work through it, but like I would say, why bother if you're about to go to the other side of the world? Personally, right. Like I wouldn't bother if it was my own children. I would not be putting a heap of effort in to kind of get them on like a daily rhythm if I knew I was about to disrupt it by going overseas. I would just probably wait until I got back myself.
Yeah,
definitely. Especially if it's in like within like a month of when you're kind of thinking about making some shifts. But basically, like when we're adjusting to new time zones, what we want to do is just get onto that new time zone as quickly as possible. And the things that we're wanting to consider are what sets the circadian rhythm, which is food, light, social interaction. So what this means is when we get there, we want to just kind of follow the rhythm of the day. What's really cool is most flights should be overnight that are international from Australia, at least. I'm not sure what the deal is elsewhere, but most like fairly significant international trips are going to leave Sydney in the evening, right?
Or Melbourne, or respect.
Yeah, or wherever. City. Yeah, I'm saying Sydney because that's where we are. Departures, not everyone lives in Sydney, obviously. But departures are normally at nighttime to make a significant trip, in which case your baby's probably going to sleep a lot on the flight, which is awesome. And so just kind of getting onto the current time zone as quickly as possible, but then being realistic as well and understanding that coming night, they're probably going to be exhausted. No, they're not going to be exhausted, are they? They're going to be really wakeful because it's opposite. So what we're wanting to do is just making sure that we're still keeping our response as if it was the middle of the night. So like low lighting, low stimulation. We don't want to be like watching the TV or turning all the lights on in the house. So maybe thinking about bringing a red light. We can talk about the Noddy sleep aid in a minute because it's a game changer.
That is a game changer.
It is. We have a sneaky discount code for them as well. We're going to put in the show notes, but having like a dim red light so it's not interfering with the production of melatonin and just keeping it as low stimulating as possible. But where we kind of get the new rhythm going is by starting the day at a consistent time. So if you want to get your baby on like a 7 to 7 or an 8 to 8, and again, remembering you're changing their whole body clock. So please make it whatever works best for your holidays. So if you want your baby to have an 8 o'clock bedtime, brilliant. We can just start the day at 8 a.m. and anything before we treat as night. So what we'd want to do is wake them most likely at 8, heaps of exposure to sunlight, like so much sunlight coming into the room, so much social interaction. We're going to want to offer them meals at the right times through the day, naps at the right times through the day, which should be fairly easy to achieve because for their body clock, it's kind of going to be nighttime. So the drive to sleep will likely be high, so that won't be difficult. And then heaps of like being outside as much as possible so that we have natural sunlight exposure, evening sunlight exposure, and then an hour before bedtime, dimming all of the home or the hotel or whatever, and making it nice and zen so that we start getting melatonin production and then back into nighttime conditions. So dim lighting if baby wakes up, not doing things like watching TV or getting them up and playing with them, but just kind of chilling with them in the darkness, basically.
Now,
they adjust.
On darkness, if you were like me and forgot the slumber pod but didn't realize until you're too far gone.
Yeah.
What else can you do when it's not your normal sleep environment?
Yeah. So how can we darken a space? Yeah. Now this can be important to think about, right? Because it's a new space. So chances are high that your baby's probably going to be a little bit thrown by their surroundings, especially if it's new. So a few things that we can do, like firstly, if we're in a hotel, literally just calling them and asking if they have a room with blackout curtains. Most will. Like
they should, yeah.
A lot will. So that can be easy. But then, of course, if you're in an Airbnb, And if you've been into Airbnbs like we have, some of them might not even have curtains at all.
I feel like we were Airbnb like early adapters. Like we did San Francisco and Airbnb in 20.
I remember. Okay, here's 14? An ironic. Do you remember 20. When we went and stayed in Airbnbs around America before it was really a thing? And your yes. parents specifically were like, oh, is that safe? And now they're Airbnb out their homes themselves.
Straight up.
Like they were really worried.
The answer is no, it's not very safe. No, I'm joking. It is great. We love Airbnb, but one thing we don't love is the you can't really predict how the sleep environment is going to be until you get there. No,
you can't. And it can be so hit and miss. So we've gone to some Airbnbs and been like, oh my gosh, this is like a sleep utopia. And other ones where we're like, holy moly, like we are in trouble.
You're staring the face of the sun.
Literally, yeah, and there's no so curtains, bright. There's no blinds, there's nothing, there's just open glass. So some hacks that we can do. Firstly, just bringing a dark colored sheet with you in case of emergency where you have no window furnishings like we have experienced a number of times, number one. But if you show up and you're like, wow, that's a really bright window, I really want to darken it because I'm going to be here for more than like a couple of days, foil and garbage bags are really all we need. Like just black garbage bags from Coles straight on with some of that non-residue tape that you can get from Bunnings for like $3 is all we need, or foil straight onto the glass. Boom. 100% yes. blackout. Done.
It's great. Or even cardboard. If you I mean, get yeah, but
practically like who carries around cardboard boxes on holidays?
I, for one, keep an eye out for fridge boxes wherever I go.
Nobody's got boxes with them, so foil and garbage bags. But boxes are great for a permanent solution. We've definitely boxed Theo's window at present.
Oh, that's why I'm saying it. I just love the box solution.
You liked the box solution.
It never fails. It doesn't, but it will.
It will fail you on a holiday though, because you're not going to have enough boxes with you to box the window up.
Fair call.
So just go into Coles, getting foil and garbage bags, and then have that extra sheet so that you can use it as a blind or curtain if you need to, or a fitted sheet to pop over a door if it's really bright and coming through, because it'll fill all the gaps. That's pretty much all we really need in terms of blackout. So you don't even need to worry. Although I'm going to give a shout out to the Slumber Pod again, because I would say that the Slumber Pod has changed my life. At least we have traveled a lot with the boys and they don't sleep well in brighter spaces. And it used to really stress me out whenever we'd go to stay anywhere, because I would know that they're going to really struggle. And then the tricky thing is, like, you always want to be so flexible with their sleep when you're traveling. But realistically, if you're gone for more than a few days and they sleep like absolute rubbish, they're really cranky.
Yeah, it kind of ruins the whole trip.
It does, because then they're just miserable all day and they're waking up so early. And then you're up at like 5 a.m. as opposed to 7, and then you're grumpy. So for me, it's not so much to do with like them not sleeping as well as they do, as they normally would. Like, I'm so chill with that. It's more their attitude. They yeah. don't sleep well, and then that ruins the holiday.
Yeah. And it's important to note as well that like there's no partnership with Slumber Pod at all. No. This is purely just
I wish there was, because so many people ask me for a discount code, and in the interest of full disclosure, they said my platform wasn't big enough.
Hey, that's fine.
But I'm sure if you find somebody who has a bigger following, they might have one.
To be honest with you, they can do it, because their product is shit hot.
Yeah, it's great. It is the best. It's my 100% my most favorite baby item that we own. And it rolls down into like, I mean, literally when Josh ran upstairs to pack it down, because we had it over Theo's cot as well.
You were shook.
You were in and out in 2 minutes. It was insane. And it rolls up just into like little. I was laughing.
I came out of the front door and Claire was laughing at me.
I couldn't believe it.
She was shocked by how quickly I did it.
It was
and
so fast.
I would like to say that is nothing to do with the Slumber Pod. That is my skill. I'm an athlete. And if there ever becomes an Olympic sport for packing down baby equipment, I would be the gold medalist.
Oh my gosh. Yes. But this is actually maybe a good little segue into what we often use a Slumber Pod for as well, which is room sharing. This is one of the main reasons why we got it. Like, firstly, Oscar was very sensitive to light. Theo, yes, but he's a bit more chill than Oscar is. So for Theo, we more got it because we were room sharing with him.
And he's very distractible.
He's very distractible. And I didn't want to be bothering him. And also when him and Oscar were room sharing, I didn't want them to be bothering each other. But of course, like, that's not always practical because not everybody's going to have a slumber pod, of course. And the reality is when you're on holidays, especially if you're in a hotel, you might be sharing a room with your baby, which generally speaking is fine until you're in a hotel room and they go to bed at 7 p.m. and then you're trapped in silence with nothing to do. So a good little segue into the next thing we wanted to chat about, right, which was sharing a room with a baby, because this is one of the main reasons we ended up getting a slumber pod, was because when we moved to Tassie, we were staying in Airbnbs and with your parents, and Theo was always room sharing with us. Or,
and in hotels, often hotels don't have any separate rooms. You've kind of just got to have one space.
Which is like fine. Like everybody's clearly like okay to share a room with their baby, except for when you're on holidays and your baby goes to sleep at 7 o'clock and you're just trapped in a hotel room in silence until you go to sleep as well.
Devastating. Geez, it's nice to be on this holiday.
I know. In silence. It's happened to us so many times. And so we've come up with some solutions for this as well. So should we run through some of them? Like, do you remember any of the things that we've done?
Okay. So one that comes to mind, shout out to Darian, who's our nanny at the moment.
Yes.
We had a, our wedding anniversary, our 10-year wedding anniversary. Mm. And this is the first time Darian ever looked after our kids.
And we didn't know Darian at all at the time, which makes only, this so
only
much
through
weirder.
A friend. We only knew Darian through a friend, but we booked a hotel in Sydney, just a local one, a really nice one, Paramount House. We'd always wanted to go there, but Theo was only like 3 or 4 months by then.
Yeah.
So we couldn't leave him at home. So Oscar went off with the grandparents. We took Thea with us, but we still wanted to go out for a nice dinner. So we got Darian to come, and we weren't sure how the room layout would be. So
I assumed it had its own room from the photos. And this is a classic example of surprise when you rock up.
It was a loft and it was sick. Yeah. It was so cool, but it was a loft. And we were so needing this dinner that we kind of said to Darian, hey, so sorry, this is going to be so lame, but we need the lights to be like almost off.
And you need to sit in the dark in silence.
So we basically, the poor Darian, shout out to her again because she's a legend, but she literally sat in that hotel room sitting on her phone, texting and doing Instagram or whatever for like 2.5 hours in the dark.
Which
and
sucks.
But you know what? What a legend. She did it. And
now she's there.
That's got to be the time that I remember being the most awkward, because we got to peace out and somebody else had to deal with it.
It's true. But like, what my actual question was some of the creative things we've come up with to kind of manage
it's
that.
It's pretty creative.
No,
get somebody else to do it for you.
Oh, God. Well, let's use this trip for example. Like, okay, we had a disaster first night in Launceston because we rocked up after our disaster day. And of course, the boys are exhausted. Theo didn't sleep, of course. And we just bit off a little bit more than we could chew. And we're like, yes, we'll have a family dinner. Yes, absolutely. We'll put Oscar and Theo down there with all of the other cousins and then transfer them with no bedding. At 11 o'clock at night after all of this, of course we'll do that. So that's what we tried to achieve, right? And Oscar went down in our niece's bed, and it was like, it's like an old school single bed that are really high. So he's sleeping in there. Theo's in the same room in the cot, but like, do you reckon in 45 minutes in, Oscar's rolling out of the bed? Poor kid. I like walk in and he's like head and shoulders are on the floor, but his legs are all tangled in the blanket and still like he's literally suspended.
Dude, jumped out of his bed.
So he's like screaming. So he's woken Theo up and it's just been a nightmare. So that was like the start of the night. Theo then was awake until 9 o'clock crying. That's how long it took me to resettle him. We left at 11, but of course they were in the porta cot that he then needed to sleep in the Airbnb we were staying at. We
it's
rock
a gold
up to
medalist fair.
Yeah.
That's the ultra pack down.
Yeah, you did. It's so fast as well. But again, like he's woken up completely, of course. And we drive back to the Airbnb and I'm like, oh crap. It's just a studio for all of us. So one of the solutions we came up with, and we won't talk about the rest of that night, literally we got home and Theo was like wired until 1 a.m. and he was awake, which is what led to this sneaky solution. Anyway, that was a bad night. But one of the things that we did on this trip was we literally put his cot in the wardrobe and closed the door.
It was a walk-in wardrobe, large walk-in.
Of course it was a walk-in wardrobe. How else could you fit a cot in a wardrobe?
I'm imagining like opening a drawer with
like Narnia. Nice.
No, and like a drawer and a dresser and just sitting him on some clothes.
A walk-in wardrobe. So like if we're room sharing with a baby, so on this occasion we're room sharing with a baby and a toddler, if there is like calling ahead and see if there's a big wardrobe, like a walk-in, that is a little mini bedroom. That's perfectly fine. That's
keep
all they
the
need.
Door cracked for airflow. Yeah. And yeah. She's pretty much a bedroom.
She is. So like even hotels, a lot of them will have like big walk-in spaces. So I would call ahead and see if that's a thing. Or if not, if you can get a room with a long hallway even so that you can put the porta-cot down this long hallway and at least have some separation so that you can at least watch the TV on low. But if that fails, like we have been known to watch Netflix in the bathroom.
Oh, hell yeah. Yes. You literally get the blankets and you get the pillows just and you just the cover tub. The whole floor. Oh, yeah. The tub if you wanted to.
Whatever you need to do.
It's not very classy, but it will work.
Absolutely. And then this is where our good friend the Noddy comes in. Extra white noise. Totally fine to crack the white noise up a little bit whilst you're hanging out there. And can we just take a moment to talk about the Noddy? I do have a discount code for the Noddy, which is simply because we don't get a kickback for it. It was simply because I asked them if I could talk about them on the podcast because we've discovered them.
It's a great
product. It's such a great product. Like how many white noise machines do you think we've had? Like so many.
We have a few. Yeah, we definitely have a
few.
Lots of apps, a few actual physical white noise machines.
And this thing is, this is the creme de la creme of sound machines, I would say.
And it's really affordable too.
It's really affordable. It's app controlled, but the best thing about it is it's portable. So it has batteries as well as like a plug-in and it's so small. You can take it with you and it's so nice and loud. Like I know some of the other ones, they're just not loud enough for situations like this. So you can adjust it a lot. Anyway, I'm going to put a discount code for Noddy in the footnotes because honestly, like Chantel, who's our sister-in-law's just got one. I've just told my brother and his wife about it. Like I love this sound machine. It's amazing. But what's really cool about it, is that it's portable and that's what you basically want. Portable white noise so that you can turn it up so that you can live your best life. Now, if you don't have a Noddy, I don't know of any other sound machine except for the Sound Spa, which is like the little, you know, the one that you clip onto your pram. That's not amazing in my opinion.
It's pretty small.
It's pretty small. We didn't have the best experience. I mean, are we allowed to talk about that on here?
I don't know. Give it a crack. We like your honesty.
Oh, dear. Now I feel bad.
No, but there's also apps as well that haven't been too bad.
I think we need to cut that out in case they sue us.
Okay.
Okay.
There are also apps that aren't too bad.
Yeah, no, there's some great apps you can use as well. We were using some of them, but honestly, I would just even YouTube a continual white noise track and just before you go to bed, just drag the red line back. Because they play for 10 hours. So there's some awesome solutions, but that extra white noise just turned up a little bit can make the world of difference.
And if you position where it's coming from, it can actually create a little bit of a barrier.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I found that we could put a white noise machine between us and the cot and we can talk and we can maybe even watch some Netflix quietly on a laptop or something. And it creates that kind of acoustic barrier as well.
That is literally how white noise works. Yes.
I love it and I'm about it.
That's exactly
white
what
noise
we're gonna
me
do.
Up. Yes. Sometimes I listen to it when I'm running.
Oh my gosh, classic. Okay, should we get to like the burning question that's on the tip of everyone's lips is like, oh my gosh, but what about their sleep specifically? Like, what if I want to go out for dinner? Like, what if I want to go to the museum? Like, how do I manage their sleep? So naps on the go, guys. I'm just going to say it. They are totally fine. There is some noise around recently about naps on the go being non-restorative and pram naps not being real naps. And if your baby has a sleep in your arms, they're not getting as much like as deep a sleep as they would do in the cot. That is like just fiction, hey? That's not a thing.
Yeah, I feel like I'd sleep better in somebody's arms.
Well, everybody knows they sleep better on us. Yes, of course they do. Like, yes. And that's something that we can do is like optimize. Anyway, we'll talk about it. But please do not be afraid to do naps on the go. They're so fine. They are so fine. All naps are good naps. It's just not the case that location impacts how good in finger movements sleep is. Of course, naps on the go are sometimes shorter, but it's not going to be the case that your baby doesn't sleep as they would do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're still totally okay, especially if you're on holidays. Like, yeah, we don't want to be nap trapped if we don't want to be on a holiday. So,
especially if you're faced with having a nap on the go or having no nap at all.
Exactly. Take the nap on the go. Now, how can we manage naps on the go? This is the thing. Firstly, we do want to play to our baby's strengths if at all possible. So, for example, Theo would never sleep in the pram, and I know he won't sleep in the pram, but I can all but guarantee he will sleep in the car. So if we were going to do a nap on the go, I would be timing it so that he slept on the way there, as opposed to if he was a baby that napped in the pram, I'd be timing it so that I arrived before his nap time, if that made sense. So like kind of playing with the timing, if you can, to support the thing that your baby responds best to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. It does.
Yeah. Now, we always want to allow extra time when we're doing naps on the go as well. So something that I see with my clients all the time when they're doing naps on the go is that they try for like 10 minutes and then they just give up and they're like, oh my gosh, it didn't work. Now,
oh, that was me.
It was you. I remember
a season in Tassie when I had to drive Theo for naps.
Yes, I remember. And you
I'd be 15 minutes up the road and I'd pull over and I'd be like, what am I doing wrong? He's not falling asleep. And I've started like, driving the exact time he's supposed to start napping.
And I'd be like, you are such a rookie. And somehow we still do the same thing each and every week after we have feedback about how to make it better.
Look, sometimes you just got to try again, right?
No, you can change. But what we want to just first remember is that it will take the average baby 10 to 20 minutes to fall asleep. So that's on average. If we're doing it in a new place, in an environment that's not conducive to sleep because there's like sound and light and like just the world happening around them, we want to be extra gracious and it might take them a little bit longer to get there. So I would suggest allowing at least 15 minutes for them to wind down in the spot you're wanting them to sleep before their nap time. And then I would allow 15 minutes after that for them to then actually fall asleep as well. So
genius.
What that, yeah. Genius. So what that would look like is like, let's say we're going to the zoo and I wanted Theo to sleep at 9:30. I would be laying his pram back and popping on his white noise because we always want to bring our sleep associations with us. So if your baby sleeps with white noise, just chucking your phone in there with it on. If they have a comforter or a dummy, bringing that. So I would be doing all those things at 9:15 if my goal was for a 9:30 nap. And then when I got to 9:30 and he was still like talking to the roof of his pram, I would be gracious and I would say, oh, you know what? Like there's a lot happening right now. And I would keep offering it for another 15 minutes because it really can take that much longer. And then sometimes what happens is we just give up too soon because we're worried and like usually they fall asleep so much quicker. So we just abandon the nap before we've really given them a realistic amount of time to actually fall asleep.
And also sometimes people are there watching and witnessing and the pressure can be a bit intimidating.
It can be a bit intimidating, but it'd be really normal for it to take that long. And then we also want to like optimize motion and closeness. So if they're like thinking again about how your baby sleeps best, like most babies are going to respond really well to motion. So what that means is if we're driving for a nap, and baby's fallen asleep and we're like, oh, we want them to nap for an hour. They've only been asleep for 20 minutes. Like, please don't stop the car. Keep driving. Stopping the car can wake them up for sure. And the same with the pram. Like if we have taken them for a walk in the pram and they've fallen asleep, sometimes what can happen is we like just pull over to get a coffee and we just leave the pram stationary and then they wake up because the motion is gone, right? So keeping the motion going, if possible, can really help. Now there's some cool things. There's this thing called the rocket that you can stick on the side of a pram that will rock the pram for you, which
is
really, oh, it's genius. I just had a client last week who was a personal trainer. And we were doing all of the naps in the pram because she ran boot camps over the nap times. And this is something that we used for her, was this pram rocket. Because it'll rock your baby's pram, which is
that's
awesome.
Amazing.
It's only $50.
I wish our pram had a rocket. That would be sick.
It would be, it's worth it. It's like $50. So if you're going to do it regularly, that can be really cool. So optimizing motion and then closeness as well. Like if your little one is a little koala, like honestly, the baby carrier is a great option to kind of keep them asleep and to get them to sleep. It's not being afraid to use motion and your own presence and holding them to help them get the nap in. It's more than okay. And I know sometimes it comes back to judgment. Like I know we've had occasions where I've been like really rocking the pram. There's been white noise going and Oscar's had like his comforter there and like people are like, oh, what? Like my kid would just sleep anywhere. That's a temperament thing through and through. And so not to feel like, you know, you can't do these things. They would really help your little one get it in. But of course, it's possible that they might not sleep on the go. It is a temperament thing as well. Some babies really struggle to sleep in new environments. Some babies really struggle to sleep if they have like FOMO and they just want to be involved. Some babies just do not nap well on the go. Oscar never did, like ever, which was so frustrating for me as a parent. Theo's done much better and I've done nothing different, but sometimes it just really is that they are either a highly sensitive temperament type. So they're really sensitive to changes and things not being as they normally are, or they're just like the most social little people ever. And just the world happening around them makes it impossible for them to switch off, but always worth giving it a go and not being discouraged if it doesn't work. Like we can just bring the next nap forward and follow that await time and their tired cues, or we can throw in a bridging nap to get them through. It's no big deal. Especially if you're on holidays, rolling with the punches, more than fine.
Because the whole point is to have a holiday.
The whole point is to have a holiday. So of course there's that balance of wanting them to have good sleep so that they're not tired and grumpy while still enjoying yourself. So something that we would do was we would do that. We'd get up in the morning, we'd have breakfast, we'd go out at like 8:30. We'd do Theo's morning nap on the go, and then we would come back for the lunch naps simply because Oscar was still napping as well. So that made sense for us to do. And then if the morning nap didn't happen, it really didn't matter because we could just kind of bring the lunch one forward a little bit, or we could kind of catch up there. So having a balance, of course, especially if your baby's susceptible to becoming grumpy like ours are.
Seriously.
But rolling with it. Or if you don't want to do that, like an every other day rule can be really great. Things like that are really easy to manage it. Now dinner's out. Sometimes
That's a big one. Hey.
Well, okay. And the cynic in me says, but why do you want to go out for dinner with your toddler? I don't.
And the happy person in me is like, if you're on holiday, you want to go out for dinner every damn night.
I know. I don't enjoy going out to eat with our kids. I don't know if we don't have.
Maybe it's in our future. Maybe it's in our future. The age that we're at the moment.
Yeah, they're two and three. Maybe it's the age. I don't enjoy it. I don't find it fun. I find it
usually
stressful.
It turns into a food fight.
It does. It turns into a food fight. But what we have done in the past is ourselves, we have done early dinners because, again, our kids do get quite grumpy when they're not in bed at their normal time. So that combined with the fact that I already don't necessarily want to be going out for dinner with them, that's a bit too much. So we always opt for the early dinner. So we'll go out at like 5:30 for dinner, maybe even 6, and have a full meal and they'll be in bed by 7:30. And it's a non-issue. And we can do that every single night and it has no impact on them. And I remember when I worked out that we could do that, it was world-changing. Like it changed my world. It was good. So when we're thinking about doing dinners out and wanting to get out, but an early dinner is not an option, we have a few things that we can do. Firstly, if we have a baby that is having three naps, or more, we can try to extend the last nap, or we can also try to add another nap in to push bedtime out. That's more than okay. If we have a baby that's on like, I mean, I would say two naps is potentially even going to be really difficult. Kind of once that late afternoon nap drops off, it's really tough to get them to sleep then before bed. And that's just because of the way their hormones and the hormone levels kind of are sitting. You can of course try, but realistically it's probably not going to happen. So what I would do, like right now, if I knew we're going out for dinner with Theo, I would try to extend his lunch nap if I could. So like when he woke up, I would probably spend like a good 20 minutes trying to rock him back to sleep or bounce him back to sleep. Or if he was still feeding, feeding him back to sleep, like whatever it looked like, to try to take the edge off a little bit. But sometimes it doesn't work. So we can just roll with it. And rolling with it can look like bringing stuff to put them down in the pram while you're out for dinner, seeing if they'll even take a short nap over dinner time while you're there. Or of course, if it doesn't work, then fine. You've given it a go. Chances are high that the extra stimulation from everything happening around them will mean they'll probably be fine to drag out a little bit, and it's not the end of the world. So giving them a go and just seeing what they do. If they are fine, awesome. They can kind of party on. Worst case scenario, you push them to a certain point and then they lose their marbles and you can just go home then. And chances are you'll get at least an hour out of that. And so it should be enough time to kind of enjoy that. And then, yeah, if it's something that you experiment with and you're like, oh, they didn't take this extra nap, we rolled with it, they didn't go down, they then were able to kind of stretch for an hour and a half before they got really cranky, you might then just want to kind of keep your eye on how many nights in a row you do that for. But again, like every other should be no problems, no problems. So that's kind of your options.
Great. That sounds really good.
That was probably so much information. Do you feel like that was okay?
I feel like it was comprehensive.
It was comprehensive.
This with is lots of good examples and, yeah, accounts from us.
Yeah, comprehensive podcast this week by popular demand. So hopefully that's helpful. Again, like if you guys want more support with traveling, I have a full travel guide that sits inside the subscription. And a lot of times people actually join the subscription to manage things like jet lag or because they're nervous to go away on holidays and they want to be able to shoot a DM and be like, oh my gosh, Claire, I tried to do the snap and the go, it didn't work. What do I do for the rest of my day? Or, oh my goodness, Claire, we've shown up at the hotel and it looks like this, like how can I make this better? And we can troubleshoot it as we go. I love doing that. I would say at least a good 5 to 10% of the people that joined the subscription purely did it because they were going on holidays and they wanted to have their mind put it at ease a little bit there.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I love the subscription for that. So that's helpful. And what we'll do, we'll put a note of all of the products that we've talked about in is that what they're called? Notes? In the footnotes, the show notes. Show notes, as well as the 10% off for Noddy. Thanks to the team at Noddy for that as well, because I know so many of you guys have been wanting to grab one. So hopefully that was helpful, everybody. I hope it wasn't too much information overload.
I think it was good. And thank you for everyone who's listened and commented and shared and rated the episode so far. It's been really encouraging and exciting to see everyone getting something from it. And please, if this week's episode has been helpful and enjoyable, please share and subscribe and like and share with your friends. That would be great.
And leave us a comment so we can see what you're enjoying. And yes, we have some exciting guests in the pipeline for the next couple of weeks, which I'm excited for.
Can you tell us any hints or any like teasers?
There could be some nutritionists.
Nice.
I know solids is a big thing. There could be some psychologists who are going to talk to us about sensory overload for moms. Lots of different exciting things in the pipeline.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait. So keep your eyes peeled for that, everyone. And next week, I think, and this is open to changing, but I think we're going to talk about signalers versus soothers.
Awesome.
Josh doesn't even know
what that means.
I'm not going to tell you. And then next week we're going to start the podcast and I'm going to say, so Josh, what do you think when I say signalers versus soothers? I'm just intrigued to see.
It sounds like a type of like a demographic of the driving population. You're either a signaler or you're a soother. You cannot be both.
Oh, hilarious. Anyway.
I'm certainly not a signaler.
If you liked the episode, subscribe, click the stars, leave us a review, or shoot me a DM and let me know, guys. And we'll chat soon.
Have a great week, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.